Thank you. Welcome, everybody. So let me just dive right in. The focus of the session is to look at three different populations. In this case, I'm going to be presenting some data from a three-city study of young MSM and looking at both the prevalence of rectal and urethral STIs, as well as talking a little bit about the implications of rectal STIs for HIV transmission. And I have no disclosures. So in terms of HIV epidemiology, this is data from the CDC, their most recently released slide set looking at diagnoses of HIV amongst adults and adolescents in the United States by transmission category. And as you can see, males who have sex with males, men who have sex with men, or MSM, are the only risk group in the United States to be showing an increase in new infections, whereas there's declines in heterosexual transmission. If you drill down further in terms of this epidemiological data, you can see that there are some nested differences in terms of age groups and patterns of change in diagnoses over time, with 25 to 34-year-olds representing the largest group of infections amongst men who have sex with men. And this group showed a 25% increase in new diagnoses from 2009 through 2013. The other second largest group is 13 to 24-year-olds, or adolescents to emerging adults. And this population showed a 26% increase from 2008 through 2011, which may be leveling out now in later years, but certainly represents, again, one of the largest groups of new HIV diagnoses amongst the largest risk group in the United States. Layered on top of that, in young men ages 13 to 24, we see some pretty dramatic racial disparities in terms of new infections, with the majority of new infections amongst Black or African American young MSM, and then Hispanic, Latino, and white, Black young MSM are the group showing the most dramatic increase in new infections. And a lot of research has demonstrated, using a variety of methods, that these disparities in young MSM are not driven by individual differences in HIV risk behaviors, condomless sex, for example. There are no differences, or when there are differences found by race. The Black young MSM actually engage in less risk-taking behavior than their white and Latino peers. And so that's presented a lot of questions about what else might be driving these disparities. We've done some work suggesting network factors play a large role in driving these disparities, but it's also been hypothesized that untreated sexually transmitted infections may play a role in driving racial disparities in HIV amongst young men who have sex with men. So what I'm going to focus on here is the role, really asking this question, what is the role of rectal STIs in HIV transmission? And it's been shown for a long time that gonorrhea, chlamydia, syphilis increase the risk of HIV acquisition. And it's believed that this is largely due by impacting mucosal integrity, increasing inflammation, and increasing HIV target cell availability, as well, of course, that the risk behaviors that lead to transmission of these sexually transmitted infections are the same that lead to HIV. So you have both the dynamic of the behavior, the transmission behaviors, as well as increased susceptibility because of biomedical factors. Population-based STI treatment studies, primarily amongst heterosexuals in Africa, have not found reductions in HIV incidence. So some large-scale trials where they've done testing or screening and treatment of STIs have not shown decrease in HIV incidence in the population with STI treatment, which has led some to conclude that perhaps we are overestimating the effects of STIs on HIV risk. But certainly population dynamics between MSM or young MSM in the United States, types of STDs, HIV transmission patterns, could mean that those results would look very different in a different population like young MSM. And in fact, populations with high risk behaviors and high STI rates may show more benefit of STI treatment than populations with generalized epidemics like heterosexuals in Africa. And that could be because the high per act HIV transmission probability for anal intercourse may increase the impact of rectal STIs on HIV transmission risks. And unfortunately, we have very few studies that have looked at rectal STI rates among MSM in general, particularly in community samples. Most of the data has come from STI clinic data. And there's very little data as well on young MSM in particular. So Just this year, my team published a paper in the JADES, Journal of Acquired Immune Deficiency Syndrome, using a simulation that was informed by data from one of our cohorts, looking at patterns or predictions of what the HIV epidemic in young MSM in Chicago is going to look like over the next 15 years, with a major focus on both racial disparities and the role of rectal STIs and transmission patterns. We parameterized the model. This is an agent-based model programmed in NetLogo. We parameterized the model with data from one of our cohort studies, one of our NIDA-funded cohort studies called CREW-450. And you can see these patterns are predicting that essentially we're going to see continued increases in the number of diagnoses or the rate of diagnoses in young MSM over the next 15 years, and that the rate of diagnoses is going to level out, we predict, the model predicts, among African-American young MSM, while we'll continue to see increases in Hispanic and white diagnoses over the next 15 years. So, you know, the sort of pattern is alarming as it is now, and all evidence suggests that we're heading towards things continuing to get worse with this population in terms of HIV diagnoses rate. We also modeled the effect of rectal and urethral STIs, or specifically rectal STIs, in HIV, and we estimated, the model estimated that about 15% of HIV infections in this population could be attributed to rectal STIs, rectal gonorrhea, or chlamydia. And in those cases that were due to rectal, that were the model suggested were due to rectal transmission, 66% of these infections were attributed to rectal NG or CT infections, and 42% of all HIV infections attributed to these STIs were attributed to increased HIV susceptibility due to the infection in an HIV-negative individual. So this simulation, this agent-based model, really suggests a big impact, and while 15% may not sound like a big impact, if we could roll out an intervention that we know how to screen and treat STIs, that could reduce the incidence of new infections by 15%. We have another simulation that suggests that that would be quite cost effective. In terms of national data, the CDC has their STD surveillance network, which is primarily clinic-based data. It's a sentinel surveillance system. But most of their data focuses on urethral infections, even in MSM, and so we don't have as great data on rectal infections nationally in MSM, and there's little data on this population beyond the actual clinical tests, so there's less behavioral data available in most cases. But across the board, they show high rates of rectal. These are rectal gonorrhea, rectal chlamydia here, and rectal chlamydia here, urethral. And so for both gonorrhea and chlamydia, you see higher rates of rectal STIs than urethral STIs, as well as higher rates of STIs, primarily, particularly rectal STIs in HIV-positive individuals. So, and then another piece of data that's available comes from Patrick Sullivan's involvement cohort. This was 803 black and white, both HIV-positive and HIV-negative adult MSM from Atlanta, shows a similar pattern of much higher rates of rectal STIs, so about 11% rectal chlamydia, a little over 9% rectal gonorrhea, whereas the rates were about half that or less for urethral STIs. Their model estimated a population attributable fraction of HIV infections due to rectal STIs of 14.6. And 14.6 should sound like a familiar number because it's actually the identical number that we came up with in our agent-based model. So at least we're seeing with different methods of estimating the role of rectal STIs in the HIV epidemic in MSM, converging around this idea of 14 to 15% of infections due to HIV infections due to rectal STIs. Now I'm just going to switch gears and present some data from our Keep It Up study. This is a NIDA-funded, multi-site HIV prevention trial of an interactive online HIV prevention program developed and targeted towards young men who have sex with men that recently tested HIV negative. Recruitment for this study is taking place primarily in Atlanta, Chicago, and New York, plus a small additional national online recruitment through geospatial apps. Many of the participants came in through HIV testing clinics or they were recruited through apps or websites and received testing at university research centers. Eligibility criteria included being a MSM, birth male, who had sex with other males. They were at risk in the sense that they had unprotected anal sex with another man in the last 6 months. The age range was 18 to 29. They had to have received an HIV negative test result. So all of the data that I'll be showing you going forward are from young men who have sex with men who screened HIV negative. And they had to not be in a behaviorally monogamous romantic relationship for more than 6 months. Trial enrollment is still ongoing. We are going to be continuing enrollment until we reach our target of 900, but we already have data from 830 who are included in this analysis. Some of the data that I'll be showing includes typical demographic factors, estimates of engagement in receptive and insertive condomless anal sex that was collected through this partner-by-partner sexual behavior measure we call the HRAS. It's a well-validated measure of collecting sexual behavior data that's been found to be reliable against diary data, against network data, interview data. So it performs really well in terms of collecting data on sexual behavior. And then we're also going to report data on urine and rectal STI tests that were performed primarily at baseline is the data I'm going to be reporting. We also collect this data at 3 and 6 months for young men who test STI positive at baseline. The sample is, as I said, all male. That was obviously an eligibility criteria. The largest age group is 22 to 25-year-olds. So we're really representing this population that's at the highest risk for HIV. It's very, very ethnically diverse, so about 22% African-American, 20-some percent Latino. So diverse sample. Majority identifies as gay and some heterogeneity in terms of educational experience. And each of the three cities is very well represented in terms of participants. So here's the data on STI rates. As you can see, this bar chart shows 12.7% of the young men had a positive rectal STI result, either gonorrhea or chlamydia at baseline. The majority of these rectal infections were rectal chlamydia with 8.7% testing positive for rectal chlamydia, 5.1% testing positive for rectal gonorrhea. Only 3.6% of the young men tested positive for a urethral infection. So we had a much higher rate of rectal STIs. And in fact, if I was on a more limited budget for this project and had to choose one STI test, I probably would skip the urethral STI and only go for the rectal STI, given so many more events in the rectal site. In terms of urethral, similarly, there were more chlamydia infections than gonorrhea infections. Now, in terms of overlap between rectal and urethral STIs, among those guys who had a positive rectal STI, 10.1 also had a urethral infection, and among those, the smaller group who had a urethral infection, nearly 40% also had a rectal infection, again, suggesting if you had to do one test, the rectal test would give you much more information in terms of STIs, but also showing that there's not substantial overlap between the two. Most people only were infected in one site and did not have infections in both the rectal and urethral sites. But there was an association with an odds ratio of 4.33 in terms of the association between rectal and urethral STIs. In terms of demographic associations, we found very few. There was a trend for the younger 18 to 24-year-old age group to have a higher prevalence of rectal STIs at 14.5 versus 10.1 in the slightly older group. But across the board, we didn't find major differences. A small trend, perhaps, as we round out the last few participants, we may see that the white young men may be somewhat significantly less likely to have a rectal STI than the youth of color, but as it is now, that effect is not significant. No differences in terms of relationship status or education. We also looked at STI rates by city, and no significant differences between cities, perhaps a small trend for higher rates in Chicago at 14.3 for rectal, but not substantial differences by city in terms of rates of rectal STIs. In this large sample, not significantly different. So now looking at rates of rectal STIs by sexual behavior and positioning, this is whether they had engaged in receptive, this is the rates of rectal STIs by whether they had engaged in receptive anal sex with those who had in red and those who had not in blue. And that difference was not significant. It was significant when you looked at engagement in receptive anal sex with a non-serious partner or a casual, more like a hookup or someone you're just casually dating. That was the majority of the participants in that sample because of the inclusion criteria that you had to not be in a serious long-term monogamous relationship. So that's really the variable that we're most focused on is sexual behavior with casual partners. And we do see a significant difference there with those who engaged in receptive sex having significantly higher rates of rectal STIs, which makes sense. We actually find the opposite pattern in terms of engagement in insertive anal sex. So those who were had engaged in insertive sex actually had less rectal STIs. So engaging in insertive sex, being the top partner, was actually protective against having a rectal STI. And when you look at this in a multivariate logistic regression, you know that pattern is clear. Those who had engaged in unprotected receptive sex, this is in the last 3 months, had a 63% higher odds of having a rectal STI. Those who had engaged in more acts of unprotected insertive sex had a 38% lower odds of having a rectal STI. And that makes sense in the sense that if you're engaging in more insertive acts, you're engaging in fewer receptive acts, and so it would make sense that that was protective. But what's interesting is actually when we analyzed this initially, we hadn't broken it out by insertive versus receptive, and there was no effect. And so we were thinking, oh gosh, there's no association between risky sex and STIs. Although that's been found in other studies, we didn't think it should be the case necessarily. And essentially, you're seeing that the effect goes in different directions. It's protective for insertive, it's risk for receptive. So if you don't break them out separately, you're sort of disguising the effect. How am I doing on time here? So these are the results. These are very preliminary. I would describe these as interim results for rates of infection at 3 and 6 months among those who tested positive at baseline. So again, we did 830 tests at baseline, of which 3.6 were positive for any urethral and 12.7 for any rectal. So overall, 14.9% were positive for any STIs. Those individuals were all tested at 3 months. And so we have 79 individuals. 38% of those individuals 3 months later tested positive again for a rectal or urethral STI. The vast majority of them were rectal STIs. So we're seeing really high rates of testing positive at 3 and again at 6 months for rectal STIs. We're just beginning to sort of scratch the surface of understanding why that is, which is why we say, is this untreated or reinfection? We don't know whether it's the same infection. As of today, we don't know if it's the same infection that they had at baseline that went untreated or whether they were reinfected. We do have some data from the self-report of the participants at 3 months whether they went and got treatment. But as with all self-report data, you know, you have some people that we told them that they had an STI, and at 3 months they deny ever having an STI. So, of course, there's some lack of reliability in that data, but we're going through and cleaning it, and in the coming months we'll be able to look at that more clearly. So in terms of the next step, we're going to continue to look at the, in this Keep It Up intervention, the effects of this behavioral intervention on rates of rectal and urethral STIs at the one-year follow-up. This will be the first mHealth or eHealth intervention, randomized clinical trial of its kind that has had STI endpoints. So we're very excited and hope that the effects that we find will be both for self-reported behaviors as well as these STI endpoints. We're working with the CDC, who is a collaborator on this project, the CDC Division of STD Prevention. They're actually the ones who perform the STI testing for us. And so we're going to be having a meeting with them towards the end of the year to look at some research questions around if it's possibly the same infections in multiple sites, in the rectum and urethra, if it's the same infection over time, or whether it's new infection or reinfection. And we'll be using our behavioral data and some other data available from the lab to look at that. And I also am the PI of a large cohort study of young MSM called RADAR, where we're following 1,200 young men over several years in Chicago, and we're going to be looking at the effects of STIs on HIV transmission within sexual networks in Chicago. Ideally looking at that in the presence and absence of PrEP, which I think is a really interesting question in terms of the role of rectal STIs and transmission in the context of PrEP. So just in conclusion, the CDC does recommend that rectal STI testing be performed, but there's a lot of barriers. The FDA has not approved the use of nucleic acid tests for extragenital GC and CT testing, which means the lab has to establish the validity of their individual test, which means that in many places in the United States, it's nearly impossible for people to get a rectal STI test, which is a huge barrier. Obviously, we know providers may not have time for taking a sexual history, whether they'll ask about rectal or anal sex. Patients may be embarrassed disclosing the engagement in anal sex, particularly condomless. And many, many patients believe that urine tests for STIs in all sites and do not understand that a urine-based test will not pick up a rectal STI. So we need to educate patients about that. And just in conclusion, there is some excellent data suggesting the cost effectiveness of STD screening in MSM as a means of HIV prevention. So thank you to our funders, the National Institute of Drug Abuse and the National Institute of Mental Health, our collaborators from the CDC who are performing the STI tests and collaborating with us on this research aim, to my other collaborators on the team and my staff. So thank you.
Thank you, Brian, for a very interesting presentation. I have one quick question. How do you guys manage partners?
Oh, you mean in terms of like expedited treatment or something?
Or treatment of partners. I mean, do you guys refer?
Yeah, so what we do is when we get a positive STI result from the CDC lab, we have a letter that we send to the participant, securely transmit to the participant with those results that they can take to their provider. And then we follow up with the participant to help them find a place where they can get treatment and talk about partner notification. So we don't actually provide the treatment, but we do talk to them about needing
treatment. Did you collect any data on whether they notify the partners about?
Do we have that, Crystal? At 3 months, if they notified their partner about the STI? I don't. We just encourage them to, but we don't track it, yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, great.